OT After Dark is a podcast run by two occupational therapists and is for adults only. The views on this podcast are our own and are intended for information and educational purposes only. We believe that sex and sexual pleasure are a human right for consenting adults, regardless of ability, age, gender, or sexual orientation. We discuss topics that cover a wide variety of sex and sexual practices. To be true to our strong views regarding inclusivity, we use common and slang terms regarding sexual topics, which may be considered explicit. Listener discretion is advised.
We have exciting news to share. We recently partnered with DirectRec, a free app for OT practitioners, PT practitioners, and speech-language pathologists.
DirectRec helps clinicians to find peer-vetted products, and we recently have added our own recommendations of products on DirectRec for sexual health and wellness.
We helped DirectRec get a little extra sexy. DirectRec helps clinicians share products and other digital info, like YouTube videos and Google Docs, with their clients.
DirectRec helps you to track clients' follow-through on your product recommendations. So to start using DirectRec, click on the link on our website at otafterdark.com or in our social media bios.
Hi, I'm Kay.
And I'm JJ.
And we're both occupational therapists.
And we're here talking to you about sex from a distance.
For the first time, we are not in the same room. We are on COVID-19. Isolation.
We are social distancing ourselves. Doing our part.
We are social distancing. I don't know how many. What are we, like 15 miles apart? I don't even know how far apart we live.
Right.
It's like 15 miles or something like that. So today, who do we have today?
We have Dr. Bernadette Hatjar, who is an associate professor of OT from Gannon University in Erie, Pennsylvania. And she has written a book, numerous articles, lots of resources for the American Occupational Therapy Association on sexuality and sex.
And we had a great conversation with her talking about use of the intentional relationship model combined with the implicit model. We get into COVID-19 and the social distancing or physical distancing and how that kind of impacts intimacy and how much more we need to reach out and find other ways for closeness. And then we get into some specific strategies for things like arthritis, cardiac conditions, mental health, which JJ and I have been wanting to talk about for a while. I would recommend, though, if you have not listened to episode 6.9, Getting Explicit with Kate Burke, where we talk about the implicit model and the explicit model. Before you listen to this episode, I would recommend you go back and listen to that one, because we do refer to the implicit model quite a bit in this episode. So that will help you with this one.
So sit back and enjoy Dr. Hatjar. So today we are here with Dr. Bernadette Hatjar, who is an associate professor of OT at Gannon University in Erie, Pennsylvania. Welcome, Dr. Hatjar. We are so excited to have you here on OT After Dark.
Thank you. It's great to be here, and thank you for inviting me.
So why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about your background, your work with sexuality and occupational therapy, and kind of what you're doing?
First, I'll sort of work from the bottom up. I've been in OT like forever, and sexuality and sexual activity was always the topic that was brought up, and I never really knew what to do or what to say or how to say it, but it didn't prompt me to move forward. When I was working on my doctorate at Nova Southeastern, two of my Gannon master's students gave me inspiration to do this as my capstone, And that has changed everything. I wrote a continuing ed article for OT Practice. AOTA Press called me and said, "We like what you're writing about, and we like the way you write. Would you, Bernie Hatjar, like to write a book for us?" And it's like, okay, I can do that. But seriously, the book took, three years. It's not a quick process. However, a lot of the people who have done chapters for that book are from Erie or the surrounding area. And I thought, well, this gives me an opportunity to pull people in who might otherwise never write. And of course, they were all friends of mine too. So that was nice. But the book was published in 2012, and that has just changed everything. I get calls, invitations, like your invitation, both from the United States and all over the world. It's amazing. But it really changed for me the way I think about things, the way I do things, because I think if there are topics or items that are not comfortable for people to address, someone needs to address them. And I'm not saying that, you know, I was the only person who ever thought of this, but I've gone quite a distance with this topic, and my name is recognizable with this topic. So.
Absolutely. And your book is fabulous. We were just talking about this right beforehand, and just how practical the book is. It gives a lot of.
Have we said the title of the book?
No, it is Sexuality and Occupational Therapy, Strategies for Persons with Disabilities.
Why don't you show the cover? Oh, well, nobody's going to be able to
see it.
Right, but we will put a link up to the book on our website so people can check it out and everything. But
now, when you look at that cover, what do you see?
Well, what I see... It looks like there's some like abstract art on there. What I interpret it from looking at it from a sexuality perspective is it almost looks like it is like a free-flowing naked body that is kind of...
Well, one of the AFTA press people was at a gallery in New York and called me and said, "I'm sending you a picture. What do you think of this?" And at first I thought, well, it's a really good painting. And then I looked at it and I thought it's one person. Then I thought about it again and I thought, no, it's two people. And it's not overtly like pornographic or anything. It's just sort of very fluid, and I kind of like that.
Yeah, it's a beautiful picture. It almost kind of reminds me, too, of like an oil drop, where everything's kind of like that free-flowing.
Okay. Well, thank you for the comment.
Could you speak a little bit about just your history in occupational therapy and addressing sexuality and intimacy?
Okay. I've been in OTR since 1985. And as I said, I've had people ask me, but I didn't have the tools necessary to address it. I think because it's such an intimate topic, it's not one of those topics that you can sort of address. You need to have some guidelines. So when I decided that I was going to do this for my capstone at Nova, I started thinking in those terms. What do I need? How do I do it? What kind of structure do I need? And I truly believe it's not a topic that you can just sort of slough over and hope that you address it. I think it's important to have structure and direction. And in my research, I found and still rely heavily on Jack Annan's Plissit model, P-L-I-S-S-I-T, the explicit model, which is a little more current, but is essentially the same. And I've used that in dealing with clients who have a variety of both physical and mental health problems. If people don't want to talk about this topic, let it go. Don't push them. But if they do, slowly, in an increasing fashion, you can bring more and more to the table to help people talk about it and look at their own life. Along with that, I think it's also important to develop a trusting, intentional relationship with these people so that they're not going to feel odd or weird about talking about it. And I think that's one of the big things that you have to look at with an intimate, personal topic like sexual activity.
And I agree. I think that's really important, is that normalizing of it, like you had mentioned.
Yes. Yeah. It's not weird. It doesn't mean you're strange. It doesn't mean that you're perverted. It means that this is one of the ADLs that you have some concern with, you know?
In terms of OT education, in your perfect world, what does it look like to be teaching future OT practitioners about addressing sexuality in practice?
I would love to do like a specialty course on sexual activity, how to address it, when to address it, how to, for example, use that questionnaire and move forward with that. Gaining a better idea of who you are as an individual, because not everybody is suited or comfortable or wants to address it. Mm-hmm. In that case, who would you refer to? You know? And then I think using some larger or bigger OT diagnoses like arthritis or CVA or cardiac or whatever, brain injury, and then depression, anxiety, PTSD, whatever. How would you break that down to help address it with those people?
Well, let's go right there. Because I think, I know JJ and I both, I mean, we've been wanting to do an episode kind of talking about, more about mental health and sexuality. Yeah. So depression, anxiety, PTSD, what do you see with sexuality there? Where would you start as a practitioner?
Well, I can guarantee you if a person is depressed, they're going to get more depressed. If a person is anxious, they're going to get more anxious. And if a person has a diagnosis like PTSD, you need to be very careful and mindful about how you even bring this up. But my experience is, as I just said, if you develop a trusting relationship, the person is more apt to bring it up and want to discuss it mm-hmm. and want to really check themselves out. But in order to do that, they need to trust you. You know, they want to know that you're not that OT who's going to go on Facebook and say, "Ooh, I have this really weird client." You know, I think trust is of the utmost.
Yeah, that therapeutic relationship is really mm-hmm. key in all areas of occupational therapy practice.
Yes, mm-hmm. absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, I wrote an article, let's see, it was published in 2017 in OT Practice about using the intentional relationship model.
Oh.
And the implicit approach to help practitioners address sexual activity, to give people some ammunition.
How have I missed this article?
I have it in my office. I know you've seen it.
I feel like I haven't seen it.
It was really good. In fact, to the point where that is the focus of the whole issue. Mm-hmm. I didn't know we were going to do that, but the big thing is, I think people need to become familiar with the implicit model mm-hmm. and intentional relationship approach, which is what we used to call the therapeutic use of self, you know, in essence, that's what it is. But, and how do you move on from there? And I think if you move on according to the structure of implicit, that's what you do.
Mm-hmm. You know? Could you, for listeners that have, we've certainly covered the implicit model, but I'm sure a lot of listeners have not heard of the intentional relationship model. I know we teach it in the program I teach in, but could you kind of go over an overview of that so people know the basics of it?
Yes. The intentional relationship is all about being mindful, being present, mm-hmm. listening, being aware of your own body language, your own eye contact,
mm-hmm.
and really being empathetic with people, not sympathetic, but empathetic, so that they know you're listening. And I also mm-hmm. find using that approach that providing things like handouts mm-hmm. or even like the environment in which you talk about this. You know, you don't want to do this in the middle of a busy clinic. I think it's better to move to the side where it's a little quieter. So if people want to talk softer,
mm-hmm.
but those are the kind of things that make clients who want to address this topic gain some comfort.
Yeah.
The intentional relationship means that whatever goes on is confidential. It is met with respect, and all of those good things that we do with our clients and our, if we're good OTs and good teachers.
Yes.
I did find the article. I told you it was in my office. The article is called Addressing Sexual Activity, a Structured Method for Assisting Clients with Intimacy. So we will put
I feel like you haven't shared that with me. You've been holding out.
I'll tell you what, when that came out, I looked at the cover and I'm like, what? Because those little people on the cover, I have those in my office. they're little IKEA people and can use them to like sketch a human body. And I couldn't wrap my brain around, well, how did they know? Why would they pick that? And the feedback I got from OT practice was, it seemed a good way of addressing closeness without kind of like, ooh, baby, ooh, baby. You know? Yeah. So that was really weird. But I think that article really gives people like another layer of information or another way to consider addressing this and helping clients.
Yeah. Talking about closeness, intimacy, maybe taking the actual sex part about that. We're recording this in a very interesting time in the world. I know for JJ and I, we as of today are in a stay-at-home order in our state. I believe your state is as well. And I've had a couple of people reach out about, they were kind of joking but kind of serious, like, is OT After Dark going to do anything talking about this isolation that everybody's experiencing now and how to maintain some close intimate relationships? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, one thought really is sort of a spin-off on what some comedians said, wait till December when we have a baby.
Exactly.
Just saying. But I think this is a time where people really need to feel a sense of connection. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be sex, but if you have a partner and you're home all day, well, my suspicion would be that at some point something's going to happen, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think really promoting closeness, safety, security, comfort, where do you get those things from? Someone that you do have a degree of intimacy with. Maybe you're not having sex with that person, but there's some comfort that you secure from that person. But I think too, I was talking to a friend last night and he said, well, when you talk to these ladies, you know, what about the 6-foot distance and things like that? And I said, well, I think if I was living with someone and we were quarantined together, I don't know that that applies. But if you go to Wegmans or Giant Eagle, it does apply. Nobody does, but I mean, I think the people that you live with, and I could be wrong, I don't want to be, but I think those are people who are at least in many ways exempt from that, because you're all in the same environment, you're all breathing the same air, you all know each other, but it's a time when people need comfort, and just as with mental health and physical disability diagnosed clients, just plain old people need comfort. And, there's a doctor whose name is Rosemary McInnes from Australia. And she says, and I'll quote her to the best of my ability, at a time where everything else has gone away, sexual activity and sexuality remain. And it helps people feel connected to the real world. And I was thinking about that because not only do I love that sentiment, but I think at this time in the world, I think we're bringing it to a new level.
Yeah.
Day to day. Yeah.
Yeah. JJ, do you have any?
But yeah, if you could, I would like to hear a little bit more about kind of how more of those practical strategies that you mm-hmm. would suggest. I know you had mentioned things like arthritis and some of these other populations, especially from your book. If you want to talk a little bit more about how to address sex and sexuality in specific populations.
Arthritics tend to not be the most forthcoming. Although out of all the diagnoses talked about in the book, it's probably the least life-threatening. But arthritics don't like to talk about it because they can't move. They're not comfortable. They're having pain. And I think if an arthritic client gives permission to talk about sexual activity, the most important thing from that population is finding out what type of pain, when they have pain, are they following medication guidelines? Usually the answer to that one is no. And are they feeling that they're more of a burden because they can't move around, because they're not as mobile? And I always ask questions like that, especially after they've completed that OT questionnaire or sexuality questionnaire, and try to find out more, try to provide very general handouts so that they can refer to something. And then I might, after that period of time, find out where they're having pain, find out if they've ever considered alternative positions or alternative times. For example, with arthritics, something like a warm bath or a warm shower can loosen them up a little bit and relax them. So they're not anxious, they're not in as much pain, and all things being equal, if they're taking their medication, you know, maybe the best time to get engaged in sexual activity isn't at 11:30 at night. Maybe it's 6 o'clock in the evening. There's nothing wrong with that, you know. And I think a lot of those folks are like, oh, well, I've never done that before. Well, why don't you try it, you know? And just sort of giving them that okay, that permission to maybe change things up a little bit, you know? With cardiac patients, and I particularly like working with them, if people have had a heart attack or have had heart surgery, the general sentiment from that group is, I can't have sex because if I have an orgasm, I'm going to die. And it's like, I don't think so, you know. But I've always found it good to get the support from a physician who might be there with me and say, listen, Mr. Jones, you're not going to die, you know. Mm-hmm. Client, that doesn't mean the client believes the doctor or me, but a good guideline is if people can go up and down one flight of steps and not be horribly out of breath, they can engage in sex and sexual activity and have an orgasm and they're not going to die, you know. Mm-hmm. But there's a really good movie that I talk about in my book called Something's Gotta Give with mm-hmm. Diane Keaton and Jack Nicholson. Mm-hmm. And his big thing is, Nicholson's big thing is being able to go up and down a flight of steps. And he was raring to go then, you know. Being able to dispel some of those kind of like old wives' tales, that's important, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And then I also think with cardiac patients, they think their world is forever changed. It's never going to be the same, but it can be, and it probably will be, you know. Mm-hmm. But you've got to trust in the people who are taking care of you, and trust your doctor, and trust this crazy OT named Bernie. but we're not going to lie to you, you know. But I think more hurt can be done to a cardiac patient if they never try things, because they're so afraid. Many of them are.
Mm-hmm.
With mental health clients, what I find is that they are embarrassed just talking about sexual activity can make them perhaps start thinking about past times where they were abused or raped or ignored or be made fun of. And with them, the thing that I think is crucial is communicating with them and supporting them. And that Plissett model that I keep referring to really can provide a good level of support. I've done the sexuality questionnaire, and many of the clients with mental health diagnoses will fill out the first few questions, and then it's like too much.
Mm-hmm.
So when they might come back for therapy, I would say, well, do you have the form with you? And they'll say, well, yeah, but I don't know. Why don't I ask you the questions? And let's see how that goes. And many times I think clients are more willing, given the right environment, to do that questionnaire that way. Because
mm-hmm.
when they do it by themselves, it just sort of opens up the Pandora's box of scary or bad memories.
Mm-hmm.
So I would do that. And then I might work on their body language, help them learn to uncover what is so uncomfortable, what their thoughts are of addressing this to increase their comfort, and then moving on from there. I think trust and, again, yeah. empathy is hugely important.
Mm-hmm. The questionnaire you're referring to is in your book. Could you kind of give just an overview of what that questionnaire is?
It really deals with, are you involved in a relationship? I don't have my, well, maybe I do. Hold on.
JJ's got it.
I've got it. If you don't mind if I read a couple questions.
No. Go on. Because I sure don't. It's not home. So there you go.
The first question is, I believe that I will not be able to have sex because of my symptoms. My pain or discomfort level will make it difficult for me to engage in sex. Please identify where you're having pain. I've spoken with my partner about concerns about having sex, which I love that question is in here, and that communication piece with an individual's partner. Or then the next one, I do not have a partner and this concerns me.
Yeah. Well, with a lot of, and go to the mental health group for this one, I think the way I have the questions phrased it's pretty black and white. It's either or. There are a few questions that are, you know, do tell. But I wanted it to be something that people who are wanting to find out more but are incredibly uncomfortable can get their answers. And I think there's, what, 15 questions?
Yeah, 16 questions, yep.
16, okay, I was close. I think all of them are pretty much like that. None of them lend themselves to be misinterpreted. They're all pretty clear. None of the questions have, you know, really highfalutin language in them. They're understandable.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I felt I had a greater, perhaps, chance of people filling these out or being willing to have the questions read to them. And maybe opening up some lines of communication. And then I would use that as another door opening with, you know, you don't really know me that well, but you've communicated this. If you can do this kind of communication with me, you can do it with your partner mm-hmm. or your spouse. You know, people will go, oh, I never really thought about that, you know, because I think many times clients will think that, you know, OTs or their healthcare providers are in this different category of people. But people know. Clients know their partner or their spouse. They don't know us. And if they can talk about this with us, well then, you know? And I think sometimes just pointing this stuff out can really get people moving in the right direction and make them not so anxious.
Mm-hmm.
There's another
question in here too that I think kind of touches upon that. Rather than talking about sexual activity, I'd rather receive handouts or brochures about this subject. So acknowledging that maybe some people might not be comfortable talking about it with others, but they still mm-hmm. then can access the information.
Absolutely. Yeah. And with that Plissett model, asking about, you know, can we talk about this subject? The brochures and things would be that limited information. So the P is already done. That's the LI. And for some people, that can be very confirming because, oh, somebody else is thinking about it and wrote about it.
Yeah. Thinking about kind of circling back to that anxiety, it seems like with all of these arthritis, cardiac issues, there's going to be an anxiety component. Like with arthritis, the anxiety that comes with fear that sexual activity is going to cause more pain, make the pain worse, the fear of the heart attack, like all of these things that can then can increase anxiety. Any specific strategies either to be proactive when working with people so they don't get to the point where anxiety is tied to even the thought of sexual activity, or if we already have that anxiety tied, strategies to kind of help reduce it?
I think any type of relaxation activity, like I mentioned with the arthritics, the warm shower or bath, that works for everybody. Think about how relaxed you feel if at whatever point in the day you shower or bathe, you always feel better after that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, as an OT, stressing take your medications. They're not going to work unless you take them. And some stress management techniques, like perhaps showing the spouse or the partner some real simple things like a neck massage or shoulder massage or things like that can just initiate that connection and calm people down. And then the other point is, of course, it's good for people to tell a partner, you know, I'm really into doing this, but it makes me feel anxious because da-da-da-da-da. And what I find is that a lot of mental health clients don't communicate like that. It's like, ooh, this is my secret, and you figure it out. And then the partner or companion or whatever thinks they're doing something wrong, when in fact, the client may not be forthcoming. Now, in my experience, what I found is that sometimes clients with a mental health diagnosis may not be selecting the best partner who would understand or appreciate that. That addresses a lot of other things. But if they are in a trusting and, I think, committed relationship, that might serve to strengthen it. It really, with mental health diagnoses, especially things like anxiety, and especially at times like now, people are freaking out. Mm-hmm. People are afraid. People have tight trapezius muscles and everything else. You know, calm down, relax, de-stress. Don't keep the news on. You know, put some music on. You know, find some strategies. And what relaxes people varies, but what works for you? And maybe try that, you know. But I think doing activities to promote relaxation and reduce stress, not holding things inside and letting other people try to guess what's wrong, you know, being forthcoming with others, and not being afraid that if you say, I'm feeling really anxious, that the partner or spouse or whomever is going to think that they've done something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I love that.
Thank you.
JJ?
Yeah, I think so. Do you have any, you know, words of wisdom for new practitioners, students, even practitioners that have been doing this for a long time, on how to address, you know, sexuality and intimacy in practice?
Well, good question, because I find that newer OTs are more apt to at least approach this subject, whereas OTs who have been doing OT for a long time and haven't been addressing it might not be feeling so comfortable. So, you know, age is not always a good marker, but I think there are more things written. There certainly are more people to talk to. To, you know, bounce ideas off of. I mean, in 2006 and 2007, there wasn't anybody. So the fact that you guys are doing this is another forum or another opportunity. I've asked my students to get on your site and click on some of the podcasts, you know? And of course, to listen to this one, you know, but I think just the whole world of this topic is starting to become somewhat more common. Now it's addressed, and when it's addressed, and with whom it's addressed. But I think, like with my students, having this be an assignment along with a PowerPoint that they have to watch, and then they have to answer some questions. One of them being, is sexual activity something that OTs should even be talking about? Students, I'll give you the right answer. Yes. and then please embellish your answer. I just think that although I did my capstone in 07, we're 13 years out from there. We've moved a little bit, but not a lot.
No. No. Yeah, we need more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do. We do.
There's a small but mighty movement out there right now.
Yes. I think three of the movers and shakers are right here.
Yep.
That makes me feel good. But, it's one of those topics. I mean, if you've ever looked at the OTPF or practice framework, you know, there's like a column for grooming and toileting and dressing. There's two sentences for sexual activity, which is 100% more than was in the previous edition. But it's still very little, you know?
Yeah.
But it's that kind of topic. And I think it's up to us to do things like this and to write about it. And to think about it and share about it, to get it out there in more of the forefront.
I agree. And here we all are doing that.
There we go.
Trying our best.
Trying our best. Well, thank you. Thank you for being the first guest where JJ and I were not in the same place.
Yes, during this time.
During COVID-19, we are recording apart for the first time ever. We have a lot of new technology things going on tonight.
The other confirming thing I'll say is, at a time like this where nobody's quite sure what's going on, isn't it comforting that people are still talking and thinking about sex?
Yep.
Yes.
There you go. What an opportune time to talk about this, because if you turn on the TV or the radio or whatever, it's like, oh, it's going to get worse.
Yeah.
But haven't we done something here today to break up that stuff? And, you know, kind of bring it back to an interesting topic that needs to be addressed with an OT.
This is certainly the first break I have had in a couple weeks. Not specific to COVID-19, which I appreciate very much.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for being on OT After Dark. This has been an absolute pleasure.
We survived our socially distanced podcast recording, and it was a great one.
I thought we did this successfully and beautifully.
I think we did too. So you had some thoughts. You had something that popped in your head about some things that Bernie said to us.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that kind of stood out to me during this conversation is this whole idea of the temporal context, in which I don't think we really give that enough credit and think about that as much. You know, the time of day and when people engage in these occupations and how different times of the day can enhance that participation, especially like she said, you don't have to wait till you're going to bed at night to have sex.
Nope. Afternoon delight, baby. Afternoon delight.
A little wake up.
Or a little wake up.
It's 24 hours in a day. That's little, 24 different options.
Whatever you need. A little appetizer before dinner. Make sure everybody knows the name of Dr. Hatjar's book.
Yeah, so her book is Sexuality and Occupational Therapy, Strategies for Persons with Disabilities, and it is from AOTA Press. Also, we will put the citation up for her article from OT Practice, which was Addressing Sexual Activity, a Structured Method for Assisting Clients with Intimacy, where she discusses the Plicit model as well as the Intentional Relationship model and how those two models link and weave together.
And we can probably add a reference too for the intentional relationship model if people want to read more detail just on that. So everybody remember, sex is an ADL.
Cheers and stay safe. Cheers. And healthy. And we will see you and talk to you soon.